And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of December 7th, 2020. Today, we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing quite well. How are you doing?
Good, good, good. So, Mariah, recently we had a very interesting conversation with Dennis and Elizabeth Kucinich with regards to a new initiative that they have undertaken, which is to something called the Global Environmental Media, which is a online platform of information about sustainable successes, basically positive, inspiring stories about what people can actually do to address the multiple sustainability questions that we have on the planet, not the least of which being climate change. And that was an interesting discussion. Of course, once you talk about or begin a conversation about an online platform that is dedicated to communicating information about sustainability, philosophical questions arise, right? I mean, what's the best way to talk about these things? You and I have had discussions about, do you frighten people with how terrible everything's going to be? Do you show them positive stories about what might be? Do you try and enlist people's enthusiasm and personal commitment? There's all kinds of ways, and I know this is a topic of interest for you, what we have done recently. So it's part of the conversation we had with Dennis and Elizabeth Kucinich, who I say are co-founders of the Global Environmental Media program. It's online. We got into a question of how you communicate this stuff. And I thought it would be useful to briefly play that tape, and then you and I can talk about the philosophical aspects of this stuff. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. The conversation we had with them was so fascinating, and it really opened my eyes and made me think. And so I'm thrilled that we're going to revisit it and take a deeper dive into it.
All right. So let me start. I'm going to kick off the tape. What's anachronistic? I say things like we're going to play a tape. There's no tape involved here, folks. This is a media file I'm going to play. Here we
go. I can make some recommendations as well. Look at appreciative inquiry as an organizational development approach. So it really, I don't like the word solution. I think it's an abomination, and it shows that disconnection between actually what it is we're trying to create. If you think just very simply, we have this is our median line of stuff that's okay. Our problems are here. Our strengths are up here. If we have a solution, we're putting our current energy into our problems and bringing our problem up to maybe an okay level. We're not focusing on actually where we're trying to go. So if we put our energy on our problems to create a solution, the solution becomes our future. So our future is directly determined by our problem, not by our vision, not by what we're trying to create, not by what it is we want, but directly associated with the thing that we don't want. So it's an absolutely regressive language. Yeah. So if you look into appreciative inquiry, I think that's a really important construct. The other thing is climate. The whole thing about climate is nonsense. It's not that we're destroying the climate. It's that we're destroying life. Yeah. We're destroying every single life support system. And what our society has done is narrowed that down to carbon, which is a total, again, nonsensical. Carbon is the basis of all life, period. By vilifying carbon, we let everything else off the hook. We let, carbon, anything out of balance within our ecological system is obviously going to throw our ecological system off. So putting things back into balance is what we need to be doing. That is not what's being burned up into the atmosphere. It's all about land management practices. Yes, of course, there's a lot to do with our fossil fuel sector, with our transportation, with all of that. But what I found is the environmental community, just as our political community, likes to create like big nasties that we can go after in order to oversimplify a system. We've done that with carbon. And what we're thinking with regenerative and integrated systemic thought is we need to be thinking in terms of cycles. So actually, climate isn't an issue about carbon. Yeah, sure, it's an issue associated with climate, But climate issue is actually that we've broken our hydrological cycle. We have broken the Earth's air conditioning system, which is all about water. It's not about that. And how has that happened? Because we've destroyed our landscapes, because we've done stupid things with the land management. We've cut down all our trees. We've destroyed our watersheds, and we've broken that cycle. So one of the things that I do a lot is I work with ecological engineers that actually look at land mass. If you green a certain area of land, what that will do for global weather patterns, for global climate, for all of those kinds of things, as well as make dry rivers run, as well as creating places that people can live again, all of those kinds of things. So we have to enable people to get really excited by what is possible and realistic about what they can do at home by putting a fruit tree in their front garden or whatever it is. But really on a systems level, when we take problem solution, we can say, okay, carbon is a problem, therefore solar is the solution. But of course it's not. Because you take that out of context, you're destroying all of the, you know, the Congo for your rare earth minerals. You'll never be able to recover that land again. You destroy all of the rainforests that are on top of that. You look at lithium batteries and storage. That's all nonsense. Very bad for humans as well as the environment with their high flammability rate. And so that problem-solution approach hasn't been working. If instead we say, well, carbon out of place is the issue, and look at land management and ecological systems, we could think, well, okay, then how do we maximize soil carbon sequestration? All of our infrastructure right now is currently burning something, and 90% of the world's energy infrastructure is about burning something. Should we be thinking about giving the world something different to burn that sequesters more carbon than it burns up, and that regenerates land through growing systems, that creates ecological cycles and is able to support biodiversity instead of, and produce oxygen and all of those things, instead of covering the surface with solar panels, which stops us from sequestering carbon, stops us from being able to grow food, stops us from creating oxygen. So sorry to give the lecture, but it's, you know, to help people into that, to that complexity of thinking in the notion of carbon, of like really, and climate, and bring it up and out and make it bigger for them and more exciting. Because then when we do that, you know, there's so many more things that we can all be playing.
I mean, Mariah, I found that quite interesting way to view the world. And I think that what Elizabeth was talking about there was how the communication in some sense that we're trying to do is to restructure our own view of the world. And it is an interesting philosophical point, which comes under this idea of appreciative inquiry, which we'll put up a link to, the idea that if your future solutions are driven by your past problems, right? If then your future is defined by the past, which is a really interesting way. I mean, I think she made some points about how, like, if you see the problem as not enough renewable energy, then your future is solar panels everywhere. Okay, but that's kind of this linear extrapolation to the future, which is not what we want. I think what we want is this more positive view of what we want the world to be, and then building around that. And that's an interesting way to think. And I will put up a link to the appreciative inquiry part, which is, I thought, a worthwhile way to shift your mind, right? What do you call it? Paradigm shift?
Yeah, it was, I mean, it really was eye-opening to sort of think about. I thought it was very fresh how she talked about if you're looking at things as a problem solution, all of your, the way you progress will be based, rooted in the problem instead of rooted in what you want to see the world as. Like an example would be to think about how combustion vehicles were created to solve the problem of manure all over the streets from the horse and buggy, right? So we created this combustion vehicle and great, now we don't have trouble with manure, fantastic. But then we created the problem of fossil fuel emissions, which we're now in the midst of. And the idea of then switching to renewable energy, now we solve the problem of combustion, fossil fuel emissions, but what problems are we creating further down the line? There are as she mentioned, there are problems with the rare earth minerals that are being used in solar panels. There's what do you do with the batteries when their life is spent? There's a lot of issues associated with renewable energy that we currently know about, and that makes it maybe not the most elegant solution, even though it's better than the current problem we have, which is combustion, the burning of fossil fuels. So I think that's a really fresh idea to not be rooting the way you move forward in a solution to the problem, but instead reimagine what the future could be. And the idea, this idea of appreciative inquiry is, it's focusing on the best of what is and what you want the future to be when you're moving forward. And I think that's a really great way to go. Of course, then that begs the question of, well, what is it that we want the future to be? If not renewable energy, then what?
Right, right. And I mean, I guess that's a good segue into what she seemed to be mentioning was this concept of a regenerative, almost like seventh generation. You know, we're always thinking of a cyclical thing that sustains itself, right? Is that how you interpreted some of her conversation?
Yeah. And so I've done a little bit of digging into the idea of regenerative agriculture and, you know, sort of this holistic farming aspect. And it turns out that a lot of our problems, current problems, are very much based in the conventional farming practices. Like basically, as soon as the plow was invented and we started tilling the earth, every time we till, we dig up all the carbon and send it off into the atmosphere, right? So not only are we depleting the soils by putting fertilizers and pesticides and all these other things on them and not continually planting crops that regenerate the soil and all these other problems associated with some of the conventional farming practices, also digging up carbon and sending it off into the atmosphere, and consequently causing a lot of problems with water retention in the soils. She mentioned the hydrological cycle. So it's all very, you know, there's a lot of layers to this, no pun intended, since we're talking about soil. But I think I heard someone sort of describe the one of the basic ideas is the differences between dirt and soil, right? So dirt is, you know, you don't think there's not a lot of prestige associated to the word with the word dirt necessarily, but soil is this idea of rich, fertile, moist, abundant, you know, nutrient abundant,
living thing almost.
Yes, that you can grow stuff in. And what we have done is basically desertified, meaning we've taken a whole lot of soil and made it dirt. That's not exactly what it means. It really means taking a lot of the moisture out of it and removing a lot of the nutrition and killing all the microorganisms that are in the soil that are so important to carbon drawdown. So we've desertified a lot of our soil. I think it's two-thirds of the world is currently desertified, which is quite a bit.
Yeah,
it's
a lot. Especially
if you like eating, right. And so the idea with this kind of moving back to holistic management of the farming practices and the getting rid of the plow in some ways, moving towards no-till agriculture, is that we solve three problems. One, we solve the problem, not solve. And see, I'm so mired in the problem-solution language, right? It's hard to move away from it. But if we move towards regenerative agriculture, we pull carbon out of the atmosphere using plants with really deep roots and constantly planting things. You have to do a lot of crop rotation and keep the fields planted, never leave them with nothing on them, and so on and so forth. So you're pulling carbon deep into the ground. You are gathering more water into the system because of the way that the plants, when you have a healthy, holistic system, it retains water a lot better. And then you're also feeding more people. You have more food. Currently, the farming practices that we have are not meeting the food. Well, I think that we have abundance in our food needs, but right now the United States is producing mostly corn, soy, and hay, which are going to feed cattle largely, or going in, you know, in as corn syrup into our food, which is not doing us anything nutritionally. Whereas if we had a variety of crops that were being planted, and there's a lot, again, there's a lot here, switching the subsidies over away yeah. from those products. And
but I mean, so, I find it interesting, the question of the regenerative cycle of agriculture seems so enormous, right? To talk about all the American Midwest and the whole world having a different way of growing food, but it's a more more sustainable. I mean, how many times have you heard that? But it's true. I mean, it gathers carbon into the ground almost like carbon sequestration, Exxon's doing. I mean, affecting the hydrological cycle is almost like geoengineering, right? That you're pulling, you're doing things or trying to return to a way that used to exist. And it's a good thing, I think, right?
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, so I watched a documentary called Kiss the Ground, narrated by Woody Harrelson. It's quite a good documentary. I highly recommend it. And one of the farmers in that documentary mentioned, I think his name was Gabe Brown, mentioned how the way that he figured out how to go back to this regenerative agriculture is he got Thomas Jefferson's old diaries of farming, and he looked at how he did it, right? So, you know, this is going back. This was done. We had fertile landscapes, and we had farming that was working really well for the soil and for carbon and for hydrological cycle. And so looking back at some of the old ways that it was done can bring us better toward a future that is the one we want to envision.
Right. Well, so Elizabeth said a lot, and then Dennis Kucinich came rejoined the conversation to talk a little bit about his view of the philosophy of viewing problems. Right, we're sort of meta, right? We're talking about views of our views, but he spoke a little bit about the idea of the focus, also the focus on the problem, basically alluding to scientific method that locks us into ways of thinking that that you can't get out.
This is actually a discussion we have within GEM itself with our partners, and the discussion is the idea of using problem solution analysis. Now, our society is trapped in this, and it goes back hundreds of years, but it's because it's connected to the scientific method, which we are all taught very early on. Think of a problem. Think of different solutions. Select the best solution. Test and retest. And then come up with your final approach. And the truth of the matter is it locks us into a loop, which we can't break out of. And when the scientific method has combined with technological efficiency, it leads us on a path towards the appearance of economic success, but underneath it is an erosion of our humanness, our humanity. And so this really goes back to the way people think. And that we're not victims of the world that we see. We're victims of the way we see the world.
So there's some interesting food for thought from Dennis and Elizabeth Kucinich, who are among the co-founders of the Global Environmental Media Network platform website. Check it out. We appreciate their being on and talking to us. We'll put up links to what we talked about at the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you'd like, send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Tell us what's good, what's bad, what's ugly. You're probably listening to this show on your smartphone using your podcast distribution app. Please ask your friends to listen to the show on their favorite podcast distribution app, because we're there. I want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support, and we want to close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it's a patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our collective future. So thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.